Today is Tuesday, May 24th, 2022. This is part three of a Grand Canyon oral history interview with Barbara Oderstol. Barbara's last name is spelled O-D-D-E-R-S-T-O-L. My name is Tom Martin. Good afternoon, Barbara. How are you today?
Okay, hey. All right, Tom. Doing fine.
Great. Very good. Glad to hear it. Barbara, may we have your permission to record this oral history over the telephone?
Yes, indeed.
Thank you. Barbara, I wanted to start this interview asking you about something you'd mentioned about the Wasatch School and how your education there had formed you as a person. Can you please expand on that for me?
Well, I guess it was 24 hours a day education as far as that goes. We were monitored by the teachers who were there, who had, most of them had been missionaries, I think, and come back from, were called back at the beginning of the war from all places in the world. And we had, fortunately, small classes. My graduating class only had 46 people in it. And at that time, including eighth grade, I think we were fewer than 200 students, mostly living on the outer edge of big cities. There were kids there. I never realized how far they came, who belonged to a offshoot of Lutheran Church, the Dutch Reformed Church, and they were from Michigan, maybe. And I have no idea how they heard of it, of the school, or how they got there, but they were there. The school was under the aegis of the National Presbytery Board, which was in New York at the time, and stayed under that umbrella until most of the private schools sponsored by different churches were turned loose. If I remember, this all happened in the 70s, and all those sponsored schools were left out on their own, raising their own funds and not having a tie to a church.
Okay.
And this was, as I say, under the National Presbytery Board. And that school had been founded in Logan in 1870-something, and that building burned. Some think that maybe it was, I think I told you this, that maybe the Mormons set the fire to try to get rid of them. And they moved down to this pastoral town. I called it a one-cow town in Mount Pleasant, which was dead set in the middle of Utah. And within view, of course, of the gorgeous Wasatch Mountains. And that was established, and I have forgotten what the year was for the Founders Day recently.
No worries.
I think 1870-something. It would be on Google.
Yeah.
1870-something.
Yeah.
At that time, when the first one went up, and when it moved to Mount Pleasant, I really can't tell you at this point.
But the school had been going for roughly 70 years when you arrived.
Yeah, at least.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I do not know what the student body was like at the time, if all these teachers came back from the four corners of the world. I don't remember. It must have been smaller than we were then. Now it has grown appreciably. I think that there are 200 or 300 maybe there, and all going off to well-known, well-established colleges. Their graduation rate and their entrance into college is a very high number, probably in the 90%. And people again come from parents find out about the school and are very happy to drop their children off and leave them.
Okay.
For a year and pick them back again in the summertime, basically is what it is.
Right.
What? They have added, they have added several complements to it and built buildings, a great deal of it to the largesse of the Asian community.
Okay.
From what I, at least when I read donors' lists, I see several Korean and several Chinese donors.
Hmm.
And I'm assuming that that is a good way for those business people to have their children in a place that is well done and leave them there for a year.
Mm-hmm.
If they find somebody. The only break we have is Christmas. So I assume there was some left on campus. I don't know what happened in that respect. We went home.
And how did you find the school such an, as you mentioned, it formed you as a person. How did it do that?
Basically, the rules were honest and strict. There was no fooling around. There was no smoking, no drinking. If you were caught out of the dorm, out of sight or off the campus, I don't know that there were any second chances.
Hmm.
There was a long line of people, I think, waiting to get in. And I think if you broke one of the serious rules, you were out.
Okay.
That's my memory, at least. And if I recall, I think my class started out with 46. We were the class that graduated in 46.
Mm-hmm.
And we graduated 46.
Okay.
All there. There was a very strict moral code, and a very strict, we were all very proud of our academic progress, and it was serious. And it formed, I was 13 when I left home, so it was the formation of those teenage vibes and hormones that went on.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we had great respect. If I were to choose a word that would describe it, it would be that we had great respect for each other and for the adults that were in charge of us.
Okay.
That was the formation, I would say. Or the building that helped establish who we were.
You had mentioned that the school had assignments, had jobs for the students.
Everyone.
There
was no maintenance crew. None. Imagine there was some.
Above that and beyond that, did the teachers give any of the students specific assignments in study or in interacting with the community or in plays or events that challenge them above and beyond the norm?
I'm thinking of music. I was in music up to my ears. I was a singer, and my teacher, Sample. I'm trying to think of her first name. Something May, Grace May Sample, had a musical background. She had a brother who was in the Chicago Opera, if
oh,
I
wow.
remember. And she pushed us. We were in competitions. The choir or the chorus was in competitions. I was in competitions. I was in a statewide competition one time, and I think one of the judges for that competition was one of the original directors of the famous Tabernacle Choir.
Oh, wow.
And we did go, and I don't know whose car it was in, we did go to a couple of concerts in Salt Lake. I remember one, I think I remember the name. I think there was a famous pianist at the time Garth Olson, maybe. That name comes to me. And we got to hear his performance. And as I said, we did sing at a couple of other local places. Our rival in Mount Pleasant was a high school called Sam Pete. And we had outings. One of our outings in the fall was to climb a nearby mountain, Mount Nebo, I think. And we were bused to that and could climb to the best of our ability. There were kids who were skiers who had their own skis. We did not have a ski team. And would use the appropriate hills in the nearby mountains to ski.
And of course,
just for their own pleasure.
They would they would walk their skis up to the top of the mountain and ride down, and or, unless there were some sort of ski tows?
I don't even know. There were no ski tows. I think possibly the only skiing they did might have been cross-country skiing. I can't remember.
Uh-huh. Okay.
There might have been some slopes. We had there was a Wasatch cabin up in the foothills, and you could go up there with a teacher and spend the night, which we did one time, and we didn't realize that the chimney had been plugged, so the snow wouldn't come in, so we froze all weekend, had no idea how to get heat.
Oh, my.
But there were side adventures like that, and the only other basic one was a senior trip by bus down to Zion, and I think we stopped by Bryce on the way. Other than that, we were there. I went home for one Thanksgiving with a good friend of mine. Other than that, Thanksgiving was there. And I think everybody went home at Christmas. We were bused by a Santa Fe Trailways bus. Excuse me. And that was a 3-week vacation. But that was it. Other than summertime, that's the only time we got home, unless you were invited by a classmate that lived close by.
Did you write home once a week or so?
Oh, yeah, at least.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure there was a once-a-week rule on that. Mm-hmm. And I was writing to a young man that I had met. I think it was the summer that I was working for Emory Cole at his gift shop, who was a Navy carrier pilot, a torpedo bomber pilot. And I wrote to him all during the war. And I cannot find his letters. I wish I could, because there was a letter that was dated on the carrier, the Missouri, for the signing of the peace treaty with Japan.
Oh, wow.
And I would love to have that. But we corresponded the entire war. He was shot down twice and rescued. And I saw him. He came to see me at Wasatch. He drove in California. And then I saw him once again in Tucson. And then we just went our different ways.
Mm.
But what I wouldn't give to find those letters.
Mm.
Significant history of World War II.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. What else do you remember about Wasatch that was formative for you?
Well, other than that, we were monitored in the work that we did. It had to be right, and our rooms were checked.
Okay.
And as I said, we had a very high moral code and a very high academic code. And it didn't take the course of typical teenage, where you just bummed off what you were going to do and had a good time and forget everything else. That didn't happen. There was no such. There was no room for that. There were a lot of romances, I'm sure. I kind of stuck with a group. I sang with a mixed quartet. One of my best friends was the alto. We had a tenor and a bass, and the four of us kind of did things together.
Nice.
But the typical teenage dating and flirting and so on went on. But, of course, there was no smoking. There was no drinking. And as I said, we invited the Japanese children from the Nisei camp over and taught them square dancing. We were not permitted to have social dancing. That was too close from some woman who had a great deal of money that she gave to the school. And one of her conditions was that there would be no, of this very risque social dancing. So I think we finally managed to dance in our senior prom. But before that, it was all square dancing.
Okay.
Oh, we had a very good basketball team. I remember that. And we did play football. I don't know what we did in football, but I know that basketball we did very well.
Nice.
And that was the usual... Yeah, the usual runaround of high schools and competition. That was normal. Yeah, and they were bused. And again, we had a bus, but again, gasoline and tires were rationed.
Right.
So that was all part of the plan. Yeah.
Okay. I wanted to move on from there to something at the University of Arizona when you were studying to get your teacher's degree there. I forgot to ask you about the rodeo parade and the rodeo days at the University of Arizona. Do you remember anything about those events?
Well, other than the fact that it was a week-long celebration and everybody wore cowboy garb, what they had. There was a parade, there was a rodeo queen, there was a rodeo dance, and I'm sure there were races. We had a number of students in the Ag College. They were all, of course, active ranchers. And I'm sure, I don't remember where the races would have been. I'm sure there was a racetrack in Tucson somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember going to one.
There would have been the rodeo grounds. Where were the rodeo grounds back? And this was 1940.
I don't know. I can't remember.
Okay.
There hadn't been rodeo grounds, and there must have been bull riding too, but I don't remember that. I can't remember either of those.
Lots of plaid shirts and blue jeans.
Oh yeah. Cowboy boots.
Uh huh.
My sister used to send her boots out to me. I couldn't afford to buy any, so she would send them out to me, and I could wear them for that week. Yep.
And then you have to send them back.
Oh, yeah.
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 Huh.
Yeah.
Okay, and then you met Tom Oderstol and started doing some teaching. That first time was in Phoenix. You mentioned that when he was in the Korean conflict. Is that right?
Right.
What do you remember about that? And that was fourth grade?
That was a fourth grade, yes. Uh-huh.
What do you remember about that year?
Not much. I was in a desert school. I think it was in a suburb of Phoenix called Sunnydale, maybe?
Okay.
I know it was to the west, kind of northwest, near Glendale, I think, in Phoenix. And I rented a room from a woman who had been a teacher at one of the Arizona Japanese camps. And I had our car that he had bought when he graduated from West Point. And we had driven across country to say he got his orders for Korea fairly soon after our honeymoon. We were married in February. And he was stationed at Fort Knox for a while. I don't know why. It's strange. He was an infantry officer at an artillery place. And then he left on a troop ship from Bremerton, Washington in May. And I drove from Washington to Phoenix, stopped by and saw a couple of relatives on the way.
What year was that?
52.
What do you remember about that drive?
on the way down from Washington, my first night out, and I was stopping there to see a Wasatch schoolmate that lived in Washington. I had a flat tire, and so I got off to the side of the road and flagged down a car. It happened to be a family that had several boys or men in it, and they fixed it, and my husband was very unhappy that I flagged down just anybody just to fix the tire. God knows who they would have been, but it worked out all right. And I stopped by and saw relatives in San Francisco, saw relatives in San Diego, in Los Angeles, and had a scary incident on that flat stretch of desert between California and Phoenix. There was somebody, I was by myself, there was somebody who shadowed me on the highway. And I got very nervous because there are no wayside places. Or at that day, there were no turnoffs, no Happy McDonald's anywhere along the line.
Right, and this was a two-lane road, wasn't it?
Right, yep. So I finally got close enough to Phoenix and turned off. I knew where I was, and I turned off before Glendale, I think, before I got into Phoenix. But that was the only, that plus the flat tire were the only two rather scary incidents that I had. That was it. Yeah. Then I went home, worked for the summer at the Hopi House or the Altavar Art Room, and then went down to Phoenix and found a room and was there. And then I left. We had agreed that we would meet at the Mark Hopkins Hotel in San Francisco when he came home. Didn't know when he would come home.
Okay.
And he sent me a cable. All of a sudden, it was middle May, and I've always felt badly about the fact because I was teaching this wonderful group of kids, and I called up the superintendent of schools. I said, my husband's coming back from Korea. I'm leaving. So they found a substitute to come in and teach, I guess, the two final weeks.
Yeah, wow.
And I drove again, drove myself up to San, or did I fly? No, I didn't have the car. I flew, and then we flew from, Tom, I can't remember. I don't think I drove up. I think we flew from San Francisco to Phoenix.
Okay, that would make sense.
And I picked up the car, and then we traveled. He had a 30-day leave, and we traveled across the country seeing relatives and family.
Okay.
Until we got to North Carolina, yeah.
Okay, and then you were raising your children.
Yep. My first child was born at Fort Bragg.
Okay.
In 1944. Had a second child in 45, but, what was it, 46? Well, we were at Fort Bragg 2 years, 2 years plus, and that's when he decided to resign. Several of his classmates were there. I think there were 15 or 16 of them, and they were all rather disgruntled with the command of the army at that time, left over officers from World War II.
Oh.
And these young men that had just fought a war decided that the business world looked much more appealing, so many of them left, as my husband did. And seems to me we left from Fort Bragg and landed up at my sister's in New York, because he had gotten a job that was in Manhattan. So we were up in the New York area and found a place to live up there.
Okay.
And second child was born in Connecticut because that's where I could find an OB, my sister's doctor. And then we moved to New Jersey because there were friends in New Jersey that we wanted to be close by. My husband commuted into the city then for all those several years. And then we moved several times after that. Business.
Who were your friends that you knew there?
West Point people.
Oh, okay.
In fact, it was a class, it was a roommate of my husband.
Okay.
Not only a classmate, but a roommate that was in Northern, I'm losing track. It wasn't Basking Ridge, where were we? We were in New Providence. We were near a town called Summit, New Jersey. We lived there for a couple of years and then moved several times after that. He was again moved by his company, and we were in the Washington area. My third child was born in D.C. Then we were moved to Charlotte. Fourth child was born in Charlotte. Then we were moved back to the D.C. area. And from then, it was just a series of business moves. We moved every couple of years, just kind of like in the Army, where they would have moved every couple of years.
Okay.
Our longest stays were in Basking Ridge, New Jersey, 26, 27 years, and that's where I taught that time. And then when we retired, that's when we moved to North Carolina.
When did you go back to the classroom to teach after you must have realized your kids, your children were to the point where you could do that?
Yep. I went back seriously and taught a second grade on Long Island. That was one of his business moves. And we were there, I think, 2 years. And then moved to northern New Jersey, and that's where we were for the longest period of time.
And that's where you raised your family?
Mostly, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. They went to high school there, come to think of it, yeah.
And then to northern New Jersey.
From Long Island to northern New Jersey, right.
And what did you teach there?
It was from Long Island to the Philadelphia area. And we were there possibly 2 years.
Okay.
And then eventually got to northern New Jersey based on the New York business. And I started out with third grade there. And my principal moved me around and moved me into a sixth grade. And I was a supervisor. And I had a generous board. I kept going back to school and getting advanced degrees, which was all to my benefit, salary-wise, when I retired. And I was there 26 or 27 years.
Nice. The advanced degrees, what were they in?
Well, I have a bachelor's in education. I have a master's in education / reading. I have all the components for my doctorate, passed all the boards, all of the tests, and got into the dissertation, and got disgruntled with research and computers. Computers are just making the scene.
Uh-huh.
I couldn't get anybody to monitor me in computer research, and it was time we were thinking of retiring, so I gave it up.
Huh.
I thought, that's okay. So then that's when we retired, and we left northern New Jersey in 1994 for New Bern.
Okay.
And our children all went to high school there. As a matter of fact, my daughter, my surviving daughter, lives right across the street from the house where she lived and she went to high school.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
We lost a daughter as an adult when she was 34.
Sorry.
I think we were still living in New Jersey. And older son went off to West Point, and younger son went off to VMI, Virginia Military Institute. Both military graduates, both engineers, both still engineers.
Are they still in the service today?
No. Younger boy went into the Navy and was on a submarine boat for a while and then transferred, and he went into the Seabees, into the construction, and built his career on that. Was in the Navy 27 years, I think, as a captain. Older son went off to Germany as an engineer, and seems to me there was some kind of a rumble something that happened to someone in his company, and he got blamed for it, and the whole thing was a big royal mess, and he resigned and went into an engineering career from there. Still is. Still working as an engineer.
Okay. And when you were teaching this during this time period, what grades did you teach?
I taught, and I tell people I taught or I supervised every grade from post-grad to kindergarten, literally. I was in the classroom as a supervisor or as a teacher.
Okay.
That whole period of years. And at one point, I was an adjunct with Rutgers. I was teaching teachers how to teach, and I was working on most of my graduate stuff. My mentor was from Seton Hall. That's where he was a professor. And
what was his name?
I cannot remember his last name.
Okay.
Tony. I cannot remember. I'd have to see it in print. I'm thinking Cavalluso, but I'm not sure.
Okay.
He mentored me all the way through, and I know I was disappointed when I dropped out, but at that time we had to decide to retire, and then I got to North Carolina, and I went into the community college and taught there for 15 years.
What did you teach there?
Again, basic composition, and that was it. It was English composition, not English poetry.
Okay.
English composition, teaching people how to write, literally.
Okay. Nice. That 15 years when you were teaching at the community college, do you remember any events that happened during that time that are still with you today?
Oh, yeah. We had a wonderful time. I had a wonderful boss who wrote wonderful grants, and we traveled all over the country presenting a method of teaching that had come about from, you may recognize the name, a man named Robert Deming.
Okay.
Who went over to Japan to discover why they were so successful in their building of manufacturing.
Right.
Under the guise at that time of General MacArthur. And Deming is the one that put together a theory that was sweeping manufacturing called TQM, Total Quality Management.
Right.
And it was a brand new idea, and all the manufacturing people were gobbling it up about how to work through a way of team building and a way of having an ideal manufacturing system, which the Japanese people had and we didn't. So that all started with him. And then one of his offsprings was a man by the name of David Livingston. and he was in Alaska, and he put together the package, taking the TQM idea from Deming and put it together for education.
Huh.
And that was the basis of a system that was called, I've lost a word. Where we put people in groups and had them discuss what they were doing.
Okay.
And another basic theory was called whole language, a way to teach, looking at phonics second instead of learning phonics first. And we went to many conventions, we went to many conferences, and presented our way of combining cooperative learning and whole language. And so that, I was in just about every major city in the country.
Wow.
Presenting at a conference, and I loved doing it. We had a really, really fascinating time. And when we retired, I called a couple of people in North Carolina, and I said, this is what I've been doing. I have been doing workshops, showing people how to combine cooperative learning and whole language. I wonder if there is an area that might be receptive to this. And basically, North Carolina was not, shall I say, at the head of the class
okay.
in its educational system. They ranked 47th
oh.
in the 50 states.
Oh.
Yeah. So they were not ready for this new idea. And so I then looked around and decided, well, I would go see what was what at the community college. And we used some of those ideas, and we that's where we picked them up. When I was at the community college, my dean was very sharp. She heard about this man named David Livingston, and we went to his conference, learned his ways of doing things, and that's what we did at the community college then.
Hmm.
And we would travel and present that idea. So that's what was exciting about that. I got to go many places and see many things and instruct a lot of other people, which was fun.
Nice.
So my career was really varied. I was in the classroom 45 years and really enjoyed, as usual, the politics are there like they are anywhere else.
Yep.
And you love the people, but you can take the politics and throw them out.
Yes.
And they were there.
Oh, yeah.
They were there for sure. Oh, yeah. Yep, yep. And I think I retired from there in 2010. I think 12 years ago.
Okay.
Something like that. Yeah.
Do you do any writing on your own?
Not other than family writing. And I did a great deal of writing when I was doing the advanced degrees. But nothing more than lengthy emails and things that I, again, many times I'll get a grandchild on the phone and there will be something that's significant in the family. And I'll say, you need to record this. As a matter of fact, I want to get in touch with Ruth's son, Stephen,
mm-hmm.
and talk to him and have him record, like you're doing, a lot of early memories of him when he was a babe and also about his parents.
Uh-huh.
And how they met and what happened.
Right.
And I have been talking to Steve about that for some time, and he's quite the techie guy now.
Okay.
Where they are in Salt Lake. So that's something, since I've done it with you, that I will ask him to record it too and then get somebody to script it.
That would be great. I wonder if I could just do an oral history with him over the phone.
I don't see why not.
Yeah. Hmm. Well,
yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. He lives in Taylorsville.
Okay.
That's the closest I can give you. I could give you his phone number. I could text it to you. But he lives in Utah, in Taylorsville. I even know the name of the road, but I don't know the number on Tierra Rose Road.
Yeah. Let's, when we're done with the interview here, let's go over that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, because Ruth had three children, and you know, would Steve be the one with the best memories to go over that? What he recalled about growing up at South Rim?
Probably. I think Ronnie is a couple of years older. She might have more.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And Tersh?
Tersh is in Texas. He does well. Ronnie and Steve are within good distance of each other.
Right.
Ronnie's in Reno. He's in Salt Lake. Tersh is in Corpus Christi, Texas.
Okay.
And doesn't have much interaction with them, I don't think.
Right. Right. Well, is there anything else we want to bring into this?
Not that I can think of. Not a thing.
Okay. Well, Barbara, I would like to thank you so very much for participating in this oral history series for the Grand Canyon Historical Society. And with that, let's conclude this part three interview with Barbara Oderstol. Today is Tuesday, May 24th, 2022. My name is Tom Martin. And Barbara, thank you so very much.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you. Thank you. It really has. All right.